Hey, real quick, I just wanted to let you know that Gabba Gabba Huh is now a record store. Well, not really a store, but a booth at an antique store located in Eastridge Mall in Gastonia, North Carolina. Vintage Village is three stores down from Dillard's on the left. And my booth is on the left side of Vintage Village. It's the one with all the records. You can't miss it. I've got over 1,000 records, toys, t-shirts, DVDs, VHS, all kinds of stuff there. So come check it out. Gabba Gabba Huh Records and Vintage Goods, located in Vintage Village at Eastridge Mall, Gastonia, North Carolina. You are now listening to the Gabba Gabba Huh Talks podcast, where we bring you conversations with people connected to the Carolinas underground music scene. Your host, Mike Phillips of Van Huskins.
Is, especially with, like, you know, the beer I prefer, I drink it too fast and I start burping the whole time. No one wants to listen to that.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. I was like, I'll move. And I turn my volume way up. So, yeah, this way I can just kind of keep an ear out for any kind of interference.
Yeah.
No, totally. Because sometimes I'll put my phone over there today. But sometimes I'll forget and lay my phone down, or somebody will pick up their phone to look up, like, a date for a show or something. Uh-huh. And they'll lay their phone down. And, you know, right now it's not doing anything. But sometimes it...
Oh, yeah, totally.
Get this weird noise that I can't do anything with.
And, yeah.
But, you know, I usually just kind of leave that stuff in anyway.
So. Right, yeah, sure.
And let's see. Let me kind of get my levels here. I keep mine pretty much cranked up.
Yeah, I was just on... Mike Watts had me on his show twice now, which was a big deal for me because he's my hero. But the last one, we talked for about 10 minutes and he was like, fuck, I forgot to press record.
I've done that. I recorded an entire episode with the band, Wheel St. Creek.
Uh-huh.
And, we recorded the whole episode. I got to the end. We signed off everything. This is via Zoom.
Yeah.
I looked down and hit stop and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. But what happened was I had hit record before we started.
Yeah.
But I had to do something and disconnect the mic and plug it back in or something like that. That stopped the recording.
Oh,
and
my God.
I wasn't paying attention to that.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, man, how am I going to do this?
Yeah, it's the same when you go to stop a video and you realize you just hit record. You're like, oh, no.
Yeah. So I was just like, man, I was honest with them about it. Just straight up. Like, this is what happened. It kind of sucks, but you want to try to recreate this next week, or we can put some time between if you want to. And they're like, oh man, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, let's do it again next week. And it worked out. We had a little bit of fun with it whenever we did the episode.
Yeah, right.
But it
happens.
There was that. And then one time I was recording with the Flight Risks, and about 30 minutes into us talking, I looked down. I'm like, oh shit, same thing happened that time. It was like I plugged another microphone in and it stopped the recording. Because I always try to start a little bit early so I can pick up some casual talk
to throw it in.
And that day we had a lot of really good stuff, and then I was like, oh crap. Let's try to talk about all that stuff we just talked about. But we actually sort of ended up being a little bit different than what we started off with.
Right, yeah, totally. That's great.
That's part of what I talked about this on Imbibe yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a part of what this is, a punk rock podcast, basically.
Right.
So I like to show that anything can go wrong, and we find our way to work around it.
The
DIY thing.
It's exactly.
Like, we do it ourselves, and it doesn't always turn out perfect.
No, that's part of it.
It doesn't have to be perfect, because it's the aesthetic of the whole thing.
Right. No, so some of our favorite bands' best recordings would be considered shittily recorded.
So I just try to work it into the episode the best I can and actually use it to my advantage.
Like, yeah.
So
especially any
kind of technical difficulties.
Yeah, it's part of the vibe. Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers. So anyway, I'm talking today to Jeremy Radio, and I guess you go by many names, but that's what
that's what I go by usually. Yeah.
So thank you for coming
or
having me out here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been wanting to have you on for a while.
Yeah, man. I really dig the show, so I appreciate you having me on. So, yeah.
I don't know if you've ever, how many of my episodes you've listened to, but usually I like to start the podcast just kind of asking about where you got interested in music as a kid. Like, sort of what the first thing you sort of remember. It's a Mike Watt question.
Yeah.
The first musical memory is his question.
Right.
And I started asking this question around the same time that he was doing his podcast, and didn't realize we were sort of asking the same question.
Right,
but I was always like, what was the first thing about music that grabbed you as a kid?
Yeah, well, it's a great starter question. So you're both thinking on good terms.
Yeah.
I grew up you know, my parents were really into, like, mostly, like, radio country and then some old school, like, Johnny Cash. So my grandpa drove me to school every day until I was old enough to drive. Mm-hmm. And his tape deck in his truck, he had, like, a four-song Johnny Cash tape single kind of thing in it. Mm-hmm. So it had, like, Get Rhythm and Cry and a few Walk the Line, like, some of the his classics. If you took that tape out and tried to put in any other tape, it would spit it right back out.
So that's all you heard was the four songs.
From age 5 to 16, yeah. Every morning, or every morning for school. And so it would circle itself from, I'm so sick of these songs, to, like, you know, the song kind of rules. And now I have a Get Rhythm tattoo on my arm for my grandpa passed away. So yeah, Johnny Cash was a big part of it growing up. But when I was, I think, either 11 or 12, I think it was 12, I started meeting friends that were, like, getting into skateboarding. Mm-hmm. One of them had the cool older cousin that let us borrow some CDs. And so I heard Dookie by Green Day, which, like, I was really like, oh, man, like, I could hear the bass on that record.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, what? Like, the song She is, you know, like, mm-hmm. just single bass intro. I was asking my friend, like, what instrument is that? And he's like, I think that's a bass. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be a bass player. It's just like, I remember that hearing that song for the first time. It just hit me in my gut, you know?
That's a good one. That's a good album.
Oh, man. Yeah. And, still... and
especially for, like, bass players, because that came out around the time that, or shortly after I was in my first punk rock band.
Right,
and
okay.
I was learning to play. And so, like, Mike Dirnt became one of my heroes.
Because
the bass is so good on that album. Well, on all their albums.
Yeah, it really is, man. And I think people, like, you know, maybe that thinks Green Day's cheesy or whatever, they just write it all off. Like, no one plays bass like him.
Yeah.
Like, you hear three notes and you know it's him, which is, like, those are my favorite kind of bass players. I would say the same about Watt or Matt from Rancid.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Carl from The Descendants. Like, I feel like the greats, you kind of know it's them right away. And, like, Mike, like, it's almost percussive how he, like, hits it, and it's so melodic, and it's, like, the hook in a lot of the songs. Like, it's such a creative, especially Dookie and Insomniac, I think, specifically. He was just, like, writing such creative parts. So I'm hearing that and really loving it. And then, you know, it's 90s, so I'm getting into, like, Nirvana and Pearl Jam and all those bands. But then we had a friend, he let us borrow Punk-O-Rama Volume 2 from Epitaph, you know. And first track, Coffee Mug by The Descendants, and 30-second song about coffee. And that was when it hit me, like, you could write a song about anything, you know, like, literally you could write a song about anything. And I got Summary by The Descendants, which is, like, their collection of their 80s stuff. And there's I Like Food on it, which is 15-second song, you know, and Enjoy, which is about farting. And, I'm like 12 years old. I'm like, cause even getting to Green Day and Pearl Jam, there's some poetry in their lyrics. Mm-hmm. And it never crossed my mind I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And, you know, you go see Aerosmith play live, you don't think, I should start a band. You think, like, wow, these are aliens from another planet that somehow won the lottery and they get to be famous. Or you see Pearl Jam's Even Flow video and he's crowd surfing on all the people. You never think, like, I could do that.
Yeah.
But when you hear I Like Food by The Descendants, you're like, I could write a song like this.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Like, that's what I say all the time. Like, when I first started playing, it was I couldn't really play guitar.
Yeah.
But it was because I couldn't play guitar like the guys I saw on MTV.
Right, right, right.
But punk rock showed me the way.
Absolutely. Because, I had friends into, like, Primus and stuff, and I thought they were cool, but I'm like, me and this guy are not on we don't have the same instrument. But, you know, so I got a bass for Christmas that year. Mm-hmm. That was all I asked for.
Now, you're not originally from Charlotte.
Hartsville, South Carolina. Okay, it's about an hour and a half up Independence.
Okay.
So not too far.
Yeah.
But I moved here when I was 18.
Okay.
So I've been here for 20 years.
Yeah.
So longer than I wasn't.
And, you're practically a native the way it works around here.
And I was coming up here for shows all the time as soon as I got my license too, and going to Tremont and Milestone.
Oh, yeah.
So Charlotte's been a big part of my life for, you know, since I was probably 15. But so I got a bass for Christmas when I was 12, and I started a band right away. And that's kind of earliest music memory was, like, you know, all these punk bands sang about touring, you know? And so to me, it wasn't about, you know, being famous or being rock stars. It was like, you see these pictures inside the CD book or in the record sleeve of them, like, on the side of a road with a van or, you know, sleeping on a floor. Or, I was like, yeah, that's all I want.
Yeah. We never went that route. I wish we would have when we had the opportunity to, but everybody had an excuse not to at the time.
It's hard, man. Yeah, it's hard and it's intimidating. I got to go on my first one when I was 19, and I've been touring pretty much nonstop.
Now, what was the name of your first band?
My first band when I was 12 was the Tidy Whiteys.
Okay.
And
was that like a real band, or was that just like you were 12? So
yeah, it was throughout. The same guys for the most part, but it was kind of throughout junior high.
Yeah, yeah.
And we all were kind of learning our instruments together, which was fun.
Yeah,
you know, and we thought we were awesome.
How I got started too. But a lot of people have what we call T-shirt bands.
Sure.
Where when you're younger, you kind of come up with an idea for a band, you come up with a band name, and you make some t-shirts, but then you never actually make the music.
I think we were only because it was harder to record in the 90s. You know, like, we just didn't know how. We didn't have the internet, you know, yet. And, like, we thought you had to have all this money and go to this big studio. We didn't know about 4-tracks. And I found about that stuff later when I was, like, older teenager. But we had some really dumb songs, and I wish we had a way to record them. Because, you know, it's so easy now. Like, you have GarageBand on your phone. Like, you know, like, it might sound like shit, but, like, you can... Like, some 12-year-olds can start a band today and actually make a probably pretty good sounding record.
We used to just set a boombox up in the corner and record that way. And, you know, sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't.
Yeah, but we did try that. Yeah, you're right.
The guitar player that played in our first band, or, you know, a guy that we all went to high school together.
Yeah, yeah.
But he had a 4-track and was learning how to use it just on, you know, by reading the manual. And because, you know, the internet didn't exist back then.
No, and those things are hard to figure.
we managed to make some really good recordings out of, you know, by using the 4-track.
So
that was a lot of fun to kind of learn that early on.
Oh, totally. I think I was 18 and one of my first roommates in Charlotte had one, and he was really savvy with it. Mm-hmm. And we started making music together, and I was like, man, why didn't I buy one of these things when I was 15?
I still got one, and I keep threatening to use it again, but I would have to relearn how to use it because it's been so long. I wouldn't really know. I could probably record the first track fine.
Yeah.
And then it'd be like, all right, now let me figure out the rest of it.
Yeah, stacking it was where it got hairy. Yeah, for sure. Logic's a little easier somehow. Yeah.
So Tidy Whitey's lasted for a little while.
And then we got really into the Misfits when I was 15. And basically the same cats, we started the Coffins. Mm-hmm. And we were horror punk.
Okay.
Because that was everything. That was like high school, that was Sam Hain, Misfits, Danzig, like really into Tiger Army. They were just starting a lot of the psychobilly thing that was going on. Early AFI, anything that was kind of creepy or spooky.
You know,
we were obsessed with B-horror movies. And we go to the video store and rent anything with a skull or a zombie on it.
Oh, yeah.
They end up watching Faces of Death at way too young of an age. And we had some pretty cool songs. That's another one I wish we could have recorded them. But they were, like, fun, like, you know, I married a zombie or I'm a vampire. And, you know.
Like, the first band, we didn't touch on that, the Tiger Ways. Did you play any shows? Or
We played some house parties for friends, and we would play in our garage, me and my brother's garage, and invite, you know, all the friends over.
That's what we did before we kind of got our taste for the real stage. It was like we're in the basement, come on over, and then we'd have like, you know, 5 or 6 friends down there watching us. Maybe a few more than that on occasion, but
absolutely. But it felt like we just played the Garden, you know.
And we'd do like a whole set for it. Wouldn't be like come watch us practice.
Yeah,
we would actually do a show. One time we set a bunch of TVs up behind us and put like VCRs and a bunch of stuff playing for like 3 people.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And yeah, we thought we were the coolest freaking thing. We kind of grew up a little bit in the hood, and sometimes we'd set up in the front yard and just run drop chords and practice. But like the neighborhood kids would come watch. Yeah. You know, again, we thought like, man, this is so punk rock. We're just doing music for the people, you know, and just playing our crappy pop punk songs. But yeah, nothing ever too big. And then same with Coffins, it was kind of the same vibe. You know, it was a lot of fun, a lot of good memories with friends, but I wouldn't say we weren't even playing VFW Hall that we were going to shows at.
Yeah.
It was a great one in Florence, South Carolina, which is near Hartsville. Like Fugazi played there in 91, and there was this band out of Florence called The Independents.
Mm-hmm. You ever heard of them? Yeah, we've played a couple of shows with them.
Oh, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, they're like, kind of like Operation Ivy mixed with the Misfits, like... They were the coolest band on the planet when I was 15. Like, we thought they were so awesome. And they would, you know, play to 50 kids in a VFW hall. And to us, that was like making it.
Oh, yeah.
if we could have played with them. those records still hold up. I found them the other day. Yeah. Like, it was really cool stuff. They put out a 7-inch on Hellcat on Tim's Armstrong's label. And, but there's no, like, I have the 7-inch somewhere and it's got the Hellcat label on it, but there's no evidence of them kind of on the side or anything, which is weird, but I'm like, man, that was like a really cool 7-inch. I wonder why it wasn't on Give Him the Boot or something. But anyway, so I think everybody in the scene got into the spooky stuff because of those guys. But I still love the Misfits. They have a special place in my heart.
Yeah, I saw that they're playing a few shows, like Tampa. I'm seriously considering getting up tomorrow and trying to get some tickets to go see them in Tampa.
And then
figuring out how to do the rest of it.
Right. Well, same. They're playing in Jersey and Gaslight Anthem's opening, and I kind of love them too. And, it's like, man, that would be so cool. I've heard mixed reviews on it, but I was like, man, I saw him with Jerry Only singing in the early 2000s at Tremont a few times. And that was maybe the worst incarnation of it. But yeah, still, when they start singing Halloween, I turn into a 12-year-old. I'm jumping up and down. Like, so get to see Danzig sing those songs, even if he's winded and out of shape. I don't care. I would have the biggest smile on my face.
But I don't know. I have a feeling the tickets are probably going to be out of my price range.
Yes,
I'm going to look, though, and see.
I know. Same. I knew that was the case with some of the last ones, unfortunately. But yeah, anyway, so those were my high school bands.
And you did that while you were still living in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. South Carolina.
Yeah, and so I moved to Charlotte when I was 18, and my goal was to, I wanted to move to a city with a music scene and get in a band so I could go on tour.
Yeah.
That was the plan. That was the only plan. I went to college for a month, and I was like, yeah, this isn't for me. I hate this, you know. But as soon as it dawned on me, like, I could quit and I wouldn't get in trouble. And no one can make me do this.
You said before you moved here, you'd already been like coming to shows here.
Yeah, right.
So you were aware of the music, the local scene.
Yeah. And very involved in the Columbia one too, because I had a lot of friends there. Okay, yeah, so I was very torn. I was going to shows at New Brooklyn Tavern a lot in Columbia. And still to this day, a good friend of mine, Ben Walker, he was in some bands there and like kind of got me in the scene. You know, I would just go hang out with him and meet all these cool people. But I just couldn't shake the idea of Charlotte. I don't know. Just like something about it. I just kept kind of coming back to like, just give it a year, give it a year.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't shake it. And I was like, okay, shoot, I'll move to Charlotte. And, you know, friend of a friend of a friend of a friend, I end up in a house with this guy who happens to be a drummer. And we toured together for the next 10 years. Best men in each other's weddings. And that first 2 weeks, I think I met the people I'm still making music with to this day.
Okay.
And so it was very much like it paid off listening to my gut, I guess, you know, like right place, right time.
Were they like established musicians here, or were they sort of just kind of finding their way in?
There's a lot of cats that were maybe further along than I was,
yeah,
like already playing shows and maybe even had some records, or CDs. So they were further along than I was, you know, but still, like, no one was like a big deal or anything.
Who was this?
This cat, John Mark McMillan, who I tour with now. He's a singer-songwriter out of Charlotte.
Okay.
Seen it on the odds, girl, that you would yet exist. Or do the numbers tell you how long will you persist? And say you're not a miracle wrapped in thought and flesh. If you think it's not the case, girl, does it make you any less? Step away, step away, step away now.
So he had just put out his first CD when I met him. And in 2006, I went on one of his first tours as his bass guy. And there was a local singer-songwriter named Mark Mathis. And that same year, we started a band called Public Radio.
Okay.
And that was my band for my whole 20s and my early 30s.
Yeah.
So we hit it hard. We toured the whole country. We did the showcase thing in LA and tried to get signed. And, you know, all that what have you, which is high highs and low lows. Yeah. There's a lot of funny stories out of it. But so, I met most of those cats, like, first few weeks, so it was really cool. You know, like there's like a cool hardcore scene going on in Charlotte, which was never like necessarily my favorite, but it was a lot of fun to go to shows. But Tremont was getting everybody back then.
What year was this?
2002.
Okay.
So like Hope's Fall was playing a lot. They were like a big band at the time. And I felt like between Tremont and the Milestone, it was like lots of great like Fat Record and Epitaph bands were coming through, so it was like Lots of cool shows all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tremont had a lot of great shows.
Yeah.
That was around the time, I think, that was right after I got married. My daughter was born, so I wasn't going to a lot of the shows back then.
Right.
So I wasn't really, like a lot of the bands that you were seeing at the time, I wasn't really aware of being existing in the scene.
Oh, sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was also wicked poor, so I couldn't always afford to go to shows, but I would try to sneak in as much as I could.
There's been those times too. That was another reason why it was a combination of things, because when you have a family, of course, you usually stay pretty poor because kids cost a lot of money.
I've heard that. Yeah.
so a lot of times it was like, I'd love to go to that show, but
yeah,
I'm probably staying at home tonight.
So. That was always the main reason it was so great to get to open for a band you like, because then you would get to see them.
Yeah.
You know? That was like the big bonus. I was like, oh, we get it for free. I tried it once. You can't do this too many times, but where I showed up saying like my band was playing that night, And they're like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And I was like, oh, my band's playing out. I was totally just lying to try to get it.
Just to see if they were like, oh, come on in.
Like, man, you can't, like, sorry, I don't know what happened. You can't play tonight. But, like, I mean, you can come to the show, I guess. I'm like, all right. Like, yeah, you can only do that, like, once or twice.
So you said the name of the band was Public Radio?
Public Radio, yeah. You turn your conscience off and your mindset. Already know, but you like to forget. Well, there is nothing else to do. It reaches your neck. Everybody swims, everybody goes for the life raft. I'm pulling you out of the storm. Tell me again, what's gotten into you? What's gotten into you? Tell me to get there. I never really left. You've got your yellow brick road, philosophy, and a Bible black baby.
And what kind of music? Is it similar to what you play, do now? Or?
Yeah, well, it was... So Mark Mathis still puts out stuff occasionally. Great singer-songwriter, very Tom Petty influenced.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we were kind of just touring his solo stuff, but we kind of gave it a band name because he didn't just want to be called Mark Mathis anymore.
Yeah.
And so we started calling it Public Radio. And
did he not want to be called Mark Mathis because of that weatherman?
not necessarily, but that was always hilarious. Once YouTube was a thing and we could look that up, it was awesome. Yeah, he was like, oh, let's like call it a band, and then I'll do my solo stuff, and I'll do the singer-songwriter thing, and we'll kind of... He wanted to kind of get a different sound out of it.
Yeah.
So, we toured a while just doing his... the songs he had already written, and they're really great. I was a big fan of his, so it was cool to play with him. And but then, you know, we're like, let's try to do something a little different, and based on, like, music we were listening to at the time. And so, we had met a friend who lived in Germany and had a really rad recording studio in Regensburg, right outside of Munich. And so we went there for a month to do a record with him, which was sweet. Awesome.
Yeah.
it was my first time out of the country.
Yeah.
It was so great. And
for a whole month.
A whole month. Yeah. Just like living in, staying in their little like apartment and walking in the studio every day. And then, you know, afterwards, just like, if you bring any empty bottle to a gas station or a bodega there, they'll give you like 25 cents back.
Oh, yeah.
And and a beer was like 50 cents. So we'd get done in the studio. We'd walk around and just collect a ton of bottles, me and the drummer, man. Because the singer and the keyboard player were married, so they were always doing their thing. Mm-hmm. And me and the drummer would get into whatever. And because we were like, you know, unmarried at the time and young and dumb. And so we would just collect all the bottles we could. And go get a ton of beer. And just wander, you can drink in public there. We just wander around Regensburg and just like, you know, try to like save some of that beer money to get a dollar bratwurst on corner. You know, you can live for so cheap there and have the best time. But the music we were making there, it was kind of, you know, it was very Death Cab, kind of like indie rock, but kind of sprinkling in like some electronic-y kind of stuff too. Mm-hmm. Like Postal Service was like really big at the time, so we were really into that.
Yeah.
But it kind of had a third gear. We could get a little heavy too. It was a lot of fun. They were really cool songs. And, you know, I listen back to it. And I'm like, yeah, it sounds a little, it's a product of its time, the early 2000s. Yeah. You know, Vice gave us a review of our EP one time. They gave us a D+ and said we sounded like MySpace. And I was like, that's actually astute. Like, that's pretty on the nose.
That don't really sound like a bad thing.
Yeah, we were right. I mean, it was the early 2000s. We all were doing that, you know. People were straightening their hair and wearing...
Well, especially now, you kind of yearn for the days of MySpace.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like... Simpler times, man. Setting your top eight. And...
I don't know. That wasn't so simple sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
Some people get their feelings hurt over this.
That is very true. But we... there were some bands in Charlotte at the time that were kind of getting sniffed out by major labels. And then... So there was like... Around 2008, there's a lot of Charlotte bands kind of... getting flown out to LA to do showcases for like Capitol, Interscope.
Mm-hmm.
This band called Paper Tongues kind of got a major deal out of it. And I think because of that, like five or six of us all kind of got the road. And it worked out well for some and not so well for others. We ultimately, we got a couple offers, but they were awful because major labels suck. And, you know, it's the kind of stuff like like we had a good friend around the same time that did it under his name. They start making the record, they shelf them because they realize this record's not going well. We've already put like $20,000 because the producers are so expensive. So their only hope is like, oh, let's just shelf it. And if he plays music as his name, we'll sue him and maybe we'll recoup some.
Yeah.
And so then it's like, if you do it as a band name, that band's done. If it's your actual name, like you're kind of boned, you know? So we're kind of seeing a lot of, you know, we're also young and excited about it, but also immediately like, oh, okay, these guys are sharks. This really stinks. As a punk rocker, I was already kind of like side-eyeing most of them anyway. But, you know, there's all this promise of money on the table, and I'm like, you know, this band is rad, but like, yeah, I mean, if it can make me, if we can get on these big tours, well, and
that's part of the dream. I mean, yeah. everybody wants to, would love to make it.
I would regret it never trying it. Yeah, yeah. You know, and I don't regret doing it because we, you know, there's a few times we got flown to LA on some ding dong's dime, and they took us out to dinner, and we had some good times. But the whole time, I'm just like, these guys, you know, Hollywood Records just signed the Jonas Brothers. They're not interested in us. You
know? That's the thing. Like I say, it's a part of the dream, but I don't really know that when it came down to it, if I would want to get to that level.
No.
Like, and I'd love to be like on Mike Watts level and be able to do what he does.
Exactly.
But I don't know that I want to be on, like, say, definitely like Guns N' Roses level.
No. And I look back on it very much grateful that we didn't get it. Yeah, and I think some people look at that as like, oh, you just because you didn't win the lottery. And it's like, no, it's like, like I had so many friends that got signed around then where it kind of ruined their band.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't see it actually work out for a lot of cats.
Yeah.
And, and the thing is, you don't hear about those bands that get ruined. So there's not a lot of those stories. And maybe they even have an NDA where they can't even tell the story how the label screwed them over. You know, it's really crazy. So I think we're seeing it kind of ruin a lot of this momentum that was actually going on in the scene in Charlotte at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, like we all got a little bit of stars in our eyes. And again, I don't think it's anyone's fault. Like, you know, money gets on the table and like, oh, you can be going on tour, these bands opening for 3,000 people a night on a bus. We're like, yeah, that sounds rad. Yeah, I've been sleeping on a floor, you know?
I mean, I've talked to people that played in bands in Chapel Hill when they had kind of had their little run.
Yeah, they, absolutely.
So, you know, they all kind of had the same story of,
right.
You know, if they did sort of almost get there, something would happen that was like not really as cool as they expected it to be.
Right. And I think the bands, even like the greats, I mean, like, because they're really great bands on major levels, like Sonic Youth, for example, or Dinosaur Jr., I think there are bands like them that get it at the right time to where they always kind of have this freedom to do what they want. But they still have to have meetings with those guys. You know, it's hard to imagine it, but like Sonic Youth is having a meeting with some guy in a suit at some point and signing contracts, you know? Yeah. and it's like, there's a part of it you have to kind of put up with. And I think from then on, I was like, yeah. Because that band kind of started to fizzle out. But I met a lot of cats through it and I started doing a lot more hired gun bass work. And I think I came to terms with like, I'll play with someone on a major label. I'll play with someone sign contracts, but if I've ever have to sign or hire a lawyer to play music because I don't want to get screwed over by this contract, I'm not interested.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts to take the fun out of it.
Right. Too, like, and it's like, if I don't trust someone enough to like handshake it, then like, I'm not doing it.
It's no wonder like so many bands that get to that level start to implode because of all the that bullshit they got to deal with.
Dude, it's crazy. And I know this band, like I'm good friends with, and two of the main cats in it are brothers, and like I don't think they will talk to each other without a lawyer present anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, it's like, you being brothers aside, you're in the same band. It's supposed to be fun. Like I'm not naive. I know there's some business to it. Like especially when you're playing like Red Rocks and the Garden all the time and stuff. But it's still like, yeah, but you can do that and it can still be fun.
Yeah.
You can still have a good time with your friends. Like, you know, like I don't know. There's plenty of bands that like. You see that you can tell they actually like each other.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I saw the Chili Peppers recently and I was even like, it looks like they're actually having fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and like, and you see some bands and you're like, okay, you're clocking in and that's cool. Clocking, you know, by all means. But Public Radio was the long one. And then, when I was about 30, when that started to slow down and, I just started getting hit up by bands like, hey, we got this many dates. Here are the songs. We could pay this much. Do you want to play bass for it? And I was like, sure. Yeah, you know, and I started being on the road a ton, just kind of
just like, as a
hired gun.
Yeah, yeah.
This is great. You just be there for sound check, be there for the show. I didn't have to do the interviews or the photo shoots or the, you know, I was like, this is awesome. This is what I love the most. Like,
I've often thought that'd be kind of cool to be in it on that level, like to just be able to be a hired gun.
Yeah. But, oh, it's great.
But I love doing what I do. So,
right. Well, I got to do both.
And like, I'm not quite good enough to do that either.
Right. Sure. well, I got to have my band that I can play shows when I'm home. But like, I just love playing bass. I want to play bass every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
With whoever I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it is my favorite thing on the planet. It has been since I was a kid. I'm grateful I've never lost that, like, fun part of it, mm-hmm. you know? And so, like, yeah, I get to do a big tour, and I come home, and I want to play Snug Harbor for 40 people, you know? And I'm not being, like, one of those, like, oh, it doesn't matter if it's 50,000 or 50, like, kind of guys. Like, yeah, okay, sure. But, like, I love it so much.
Yeah,
you know? And so I always have my local, band, too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And being involved in the local scene is just very important to me. You know, like, it's been good to me, and, you know, getting to play Tremont was a big deal for me, you know, getting to play the Muse was a big deal for me, and I still don't take that for granted. I love playing Petra's so much. I love playing Tommy's. Like, if someone would trust me enough to give me a night to let my band do their thing, like, I'm so grateful.
Mm-hmm. You know? that's the way I feel too.
Like, yeah.
You're providing me a corner of your bar or a stage to play on. Like, if you're paying me, that's just like, that's something extra. I just want to get up there and do my thing and do it for some people that might appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I think people think I'm full of shit when I say that sometimes. I'm like, no, dude, I just want to play.
Yeah.
And I'm stoked anytime someone lets me.
I love it. I mean, it's nice when you get a big crowd and you get a nice reaction and you get a little paycheck at the end of the night.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? No.
I mean, it's
I ain't never, mad at any of that.
It's never much because, you know, what we do around here and the way people come out to shows around here.
Right.
It's never a lot, but it's always appreciated, whatever it is.
Absolutely. It's all like, man, I just got to have the best time with my friends, and a bunch of cool people came out.
Exactly.
And I made enough to cover my bar tab and maybe reorder some more t-shirts, you know.
Yep. We're going to go record this Saturday, and that's what our money goes to. It goes to record or t-shirts. And so we don't have to come out of our own pockets for it.
Right, exactly.
The only thing we have to come out of pocket for is mostly equipment.
But right, yeah,
like,
right.
I took Ben and we got drum heads for him the other day because we're going to go record. I was like, we can use some band money for that because we got it right now.
Right, that's awesome.
And I want your drums to sound good on this recording.
Exactly. Yeah, bass strings ain't cheap, man. Yeah. You know. Yeah, and I feel like every other month my Ampeg needs $500, you know, but I digress.
Yeah. I told him, I said, man, it'd be nice if like every time you needed drum heads, I could take, you know, I could give you the money for it.
Right.
I
said,
but, you know, it just depends on what we're doing at the time and how well things are going.
So. Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly, man.
So you were, basically, you said you were playing sort of as a hired gun.
Yep.
But when did you put together another band here, local band?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of the year. I mean, I think by 2012, I started touring regularly with an artist. That was really great. It was like regular work, and I really enjoyed it. And
about how many days a year would you say you're on the road?
Starting then, probably average of 80. A good 2019, I did 170 shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2020, I did 2.
Okay. Yeah. That was the year.
This thing happened. So yeah, average probably 80, some years, 100, some years, a little more.
Yeah.
And so that was really great. Cause I was learning so much and like, you know, I toured the super broke band tours and then maybe some nicer ones and kind of everything in between. And, I think this is the first time it was like really like regular and it was like cool shows and playing on the records. And I was getting a lot more starting to get a lot more recording work around then too, around 2012, which is cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't have, every time I'd kind of get something going on my own, it would kind of start to fall apart. Finally had a little luck and I put a band together called the Rainiers.
Okay.
And very alt country.
Yeah.
Like, Ryan Adams, Tom Petty, Love Letter, you know, Replacements.
Like wine.
around that time, me and Leonardo Solis from he's in a local band with his wife called Solis, who are amazing.
Yeah.
Synthy pop. And we met and became really great friends, and we're like, hey, we should start like a fake record label. So maybe it'll be easier to book shows.
Yeah.
For your band and my band. And then we started little bands together, and like, we can come up with this roster, and maybe when we try to book shows, people will take us more seriously because it'll be coming from Four Finger Records.
Yeah.
Which we got that name from The Simpsons. like most things in my life. And, excuse me.
Yeah, one time we were a band that I had, the Accidents, when it broke up.
Mm-hmm.
We were coming up with band names for the next band that never really took off.
Right.
And one of the names I really leaned into or really pushed for was Me Fail English.
That's impossible.
Like, Me Fail English? That's impossible.
Yeah. $1,000 movie, my current band, is also a Simpsons reference. Yeah. Tonight on ABC's $1,000 movie. So I started the Rainiers, and we started writing some songs. I was really stoked on and playing a lot of shows, and we played around Carolina. And but then me and Leo, it kind of dawned on us, like, hey, we could do a label kind of for real. Like, we know some cool younger bands, and mm-hmm. Leo's a producer, has a great studio. I've been doing the DIY thing since I was a kid, so I know, like, the best way to print merch and mm-hmm. print out flyers and promote a show and how to book a show. And so we're like, let's try to work with some younger bands that, like, some of our friends that are starting stuff, and maybe we can help them out.
Yeah.
You know? And then we kind of got a little more on a kick of, like, kind of what Discord Records does is, you know, they say their ethos is like, let's document the DC music scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, kind of always has been. And they only work with DC bands. And so we're like, well, we can't document the whole Charlotte music scene. There's already some great labels here. You know, Self-Aware and Refresh are amazing. And like, let's just document our little corner of it, our friend group.
Yeah.
You know, and so we started making mixed cassette compilations. Mm-hmm. And we did a few of those. And it was all Charlotte bands that we were homies with. And really cool. Yeah, you know, it's called Music Is None of Our Business, which is also a Simpsons reference. You'll notice the theme would be.
Yep.
When you take them out of context, they sound deep sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Music Is None of My Business, Marge said that. And I was like, what a beautifully written line. And so, we hit the Rainiers hard for a while. And it's just kind of on an indefinite hiatus, I guess, until we all kind of get together again. But mm-hmm. everybody just got busy, and myself included. You know, it's no one's fault. We have a bunch of songs. I'd love to at least do a record and document them, as it were.
Yeah.
But, you know, the typical thing with me is, because I was in a, I guess around right before that, I was in a punk band called Bad Talk also, and we were hitting it pretty hard. Very hot water music.
Okay.
Kind of melodic, hardcore punk.
Yeah, yeah.
We did a couple singles, played a ton of shows, and the singer had to move, and then I moved to Charlotte again. And, you know, we just kind of fizzled apart a little bit. And again, that's another one. I hope we can do something again sometime, because the shows were a blast. But it kind of seems the constant theme is, like, singers need to move on. And then, because I can write lyrics, I can write melodies, but I can't sing.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was finally like, you know what? I'm going to start a fucking instrumental band. And I know so many great musicians. I can always say yes to a show I want to do. And I can just put a band together. Mm-hmm. I have my A squad, but if they can't do it or someone moves, I can keep the machine going. And so 2019, I started $1,000 Movie, which is my current project. And, kind of started with kind of writing some riffs with a friend for maybe a potential licensing thing. But I was like, man, this is actually really cool riffs. I want to start mm-hmm. a band with this. I love Unwed Sailor and Godspeed and Explosions in the Sky. Like, I really love instrumental post-rock.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, man, it'd be really cool to, like, play shows with this. Like, there's a couple of cool instrumental bands in town. Like, I think they called it, but Cusco especially. They were great. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you ever check them out, but yeah, put on a great show. So it wasn't unheard of in the scene either. So I was like, man, I'm going to start an instrumental band. We're going to start gigging. It's kind of like, and it's been one of my favorite things I've ever done.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, it kind of came out of the place of like, I just need to start a band where I don't have to depend on a singer. Like, because they're always going to have babies or get married or move.
That's why, like, with Van Huskins, you know, we're a three piece and none of us can really sing that well. We can scream, okay. So we do that, but we kind of do it minimally.
Yeah.
So we don't have all these words to memorize and all that stuff. So.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I always say that we'd be an instrumental band if we were just a little bit more technically proficient.
Right.
I mean, we could probably do it. I'd love the challenge of doing that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a fun challenge, man, because, like, especially at the shows, people were trying to buy me a drink. I'm like, dude, I got to be sober for a $1,000 movie show because I wrote these songs way too hard. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, man, and it's like the response in the local scene and even in like Columbia, Winston-Salem, like it's been really good. Like people are coming out for it and I'm always kind of shocked a little bit because I'm like, it's kind of a weird instrumental band where it's kind of bass led.
Yeah.
You know, I would always
I love that.
Oh yeah. Thank you.
as a bass player, of course.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, I'm writing music I want to listen to, I guess at the end of the day, you know? And so my thing is always like, if I connect to it, there's gotta be at least one other person that would, you know? So I'll work on the songs until I feel a gut punch from them. And I'm like, well, surely at least one other person will feel a gut punch, you know? And if one other person doesn't, that's it. That's cool.
I love that. It's like that atmospheric. It's got, I call it world building music because if you shut your eyes, you can like feel, you can, you know, envision things being built by the guitar.
Totally.
The bass,
yeah. So that's cool. I like to hear that. Yeah.
I totally love that.
No, we, you know, I mean, for lack of a better term, because the word movie isn't our band name, but it is, I did try to write it like cinematically, you know, and like, and playing the set list out to where it's like a movement, like it's going somewhere, you know, and I think people can write it off as pretentious when you talk about saying something with instrumental music, but I think. But it's not that weird when you look at history. I mean, like...
No, not at all.
John Coltrane's Love Supreme, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's... With the exception of him saying Love Supreme over and over again in, like, track one or two. you know, like, it's an instrumental record, you know? Like, or most of Miles Davis, like, all these cats had something to say, you know? They just let their instrument do it for them. Mm-hmm. That was never weird back then, but now it's kind of like, how is this a concept album? There's no lyrics. And, like... I'm like, well, yeah, but I'm. Use your imagination.
I was listening to it. I've listened to it a couple of times a day. Then you went and I even listened to some of the older stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I can totally see the concept in that, listening to it and everything. And it brings out emotions, like the music that you play.
Yeah, thank you, man.
It's really awesome. And I love the fact that not only is it, like, beautiful at times, but you're not afraid to, like, you know, do some power chords and rock it up and even punk rock it up at times.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Especially with Central Avenue.
Yeah. I had to,
that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Cause I was like, you know, I was kind of writing out like almost a storyboard for this EP. Cause it's to me a concept record about someone moving to a city to try to join a band and growing old there and becoming home. So in summation, and that's my story, but also like, I'm sure other people can connect with that or at least enjoy it. But like such a big part of my story is punk rock, you know? Yeah. And so I was like, but that's not really, we're more shoegazy. Would it be weird to put out a punk song on a record? I'm like, well, you know, like we're our own label. What are we going to get fired? You know, I can do whatever the hell I want.
It flows from the first track to the second track to that. And then it all works. It works
well
together.
Yeah. I tried to plan it out to where it didn't feel like
it's not out of place at all.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't want it to feel like total, like the rug got pulled out from some under someone. And oddly enough, it's been one of the, like, probably the number two most streamed song of the record. And so I was like, okay, I thought everyone would kind of skip this one. But it, you're right, it's a piece to a bigger piece.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thankfully, it seems like people caught on to that. And I was hoping they would, and it wouldn't feel like super alien. But yeah, man, it's been really cool that it seems like people are kind of getting what I'm trying to say from it. And I was worried I was maybe being too heady about it or something. But yeah, I guess that was an earlier point. It's like, I never used to, in the old days of music, it wasn't weird that you could tell a story without words, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I guess I kind of jumped ahead, but we're talking about the latest. It's the release that you put out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's called, I can't remember exactly what it's called.
It's called Give Me a Year.
Give Me a Year, yeah.
Yeah.
And it starts off with Mike Watt saying,
correct.
Give me a year.
Give me a year and see what happens. Yeah. I asked him if he'd do that for me, and he was like, yeah, absolutely. And he did it. And I was like, well, shit, I should have asked him to play bass on it.
He'd probably do it.
He probably would. I know. I think the next one I'll ask him to, because we email back and forth a good bit now. It kind of became pen pals a little bit, yeah.
I want to get him on this podcast at some point. I haven't reached out to him yet, but yeah. I'm going to do it soon.
I guarantee he would do it. He's so into it, man. Like
especially now that he's got a definite North Carolina connection with doing that project with Scotty Irvin.
Yeah, which is very cool.
You know, I just want to talk to him about John Coltrane.
Yeah, man.
Covering Superchunk. And
yeah.
Just talk to him about his journey in music, too.
He looks at it like giving back to, like, the punk community is all about giving because you get so much from it. And to him, like, going on someone else's show, like, is a very big part of it.
That's why, like, he's my idol.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't care about Mick Jagger or anything. No. I mean, I love Eddie Van Halen.
Sure.
But Mike Watt is, like, really my Eddie Van Halen.
Dude,
Mike
Watt's if I could have a drink with a living or dead musician, I'm not exaggerating, it would be Mike Watt.
Yeah.
And he crashed at my house that night.
Yeah, yeah.
Have I told you the story?
I've heard the story.
Okay.
I think you might have told it on M-Vibes.
But, yeah, he...
You can tell it again here. That's
well, but the main gist of it, though, is like we got to him and the band all crashed in my house after we opened for him at Snug.
Yeah.
MSSV was the project he was with.
It's an excellent show, too.
Oh, God, it was so great.
And that record's so good, too.
It's amazing. I genuinely love it. And their dynamics during that show getting so quiet together, like fading out live, I'm like, this is unbelievable. Like,
and I love going to a Mike Watt show, but not really hearing any Mike Watt stuff.
No.
Or not much Mike Watt
stuff. No Minutemen, no Fire Hose.
Yeah, there were a couple of nods, but that was about it.
Right. And sure, would I have loved to hear them do The Anchor or something.
Yeah,
like, absolutely. It's my favorite song. But I love that it was this project.
Yeah,
and
he
very much tours that way. Like, I'm touring this project.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he could go out and do the hits, and I'd be there.
But
I'm also there for...
I've seen him do that, with the Missing Man.
Missing Man, yeah. He'll sprinkle them in, which I really enjoy. Like, they'll do toadies and stuff. We got to open for him, and they were couch surfing. 48 shows in 48 days and sleeping on couches. I was like, that's so rad to me. And
Especially, like, at that age, to just say, I'm going to do this.
And Drummer Man... Stephen Hodges, who, you know, he's played for Tom Waits, all these great bands. He played on Watt's Engine Room album, which is one of my all-time favorite albums.
Oh, yeah, I love
that. He's 70, and he's doing Snug Harbor, 48 shows in 48 days, and couch surfing, and, like, I couldn't believe it, man. It inspires me so much. There's a lot of ageism in music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, like, you haven't made about 30, quit and kill yourself, you know, and I hate it. Like, and you see these cats at 70 still putting on the best show.
Oh, yeah.
And no one's like, oh, these old guys are still got it. No, it's like, no, they're blowing everybody away.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I love it so much.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They were talking about needing a place to crash, and I was like, hey, I got a clean house 5 minutes from the club. You know, Watt kept saying, I got to get up early in the morning radio. We can't hang out too much, but let's talk bass. And we drank, you know, most of a bottle of Jim Beam together and talked until about 5 a.m. And I'm self-aware to a fault. I feel like, especially when I meet someone I look up to, like, you know, I've gotten to meet most of the Dissonance, like, outside the clubs when they play. And I always like to say, hey, thanks for playing. Big influence on me. Very nice to meet you. And they're always very kind. And I kind of leave it at that.
That's sort of what I usually do.
Yeah. But, like, Watt was very, like, he was so kind, but he was very much, like, asking me about me and, like, how did I start playing bass? And meant so much because, like, he means so much to me. And, but yeah, he kept saying, I got to go to bed. But what do you think about this? And man, we just talked and talked and talked till 5 a.m. And I was like, I didn't ask for the picture for him to sign anything. I do kind of regret. I wanted him to sign my bass. But I also didn't want to break the stride of the conversation, yeah, yeah. You know, because I'm like, I'll meet him again one day. It'll be fine. But he was just like, his whole demeanor too. It was like, you know, he mentioned his radio show, and I was like, oh yeah, I love your show. And he's like, you listen to my show? Like, it was like oh, this guy in Charlotte listens to my radio show. Yeah. Like, that still meant something to him, you know, like music still means a lot to him. And he's always kind of influenced me that way. And I'm like, I never want to lose that. He's all about gratitude. And I try to be that way too.
Yeah.
So without knowing a lot of that, just talking to him, I was like, man, like I just look up to him so much. Yeah. Sometimes meeting those people can ruin that, but actually compounded it with interest. You know?
I was gonna say, like, I've met him before, and he's genuine as can be. And just like, you're not going to be disappointed by meeting Mike Watt.
Absolutely. Like, I always say, like, in the music business, usually when you meet the people that should have an ego don't, and the people that shouldn't do. Yeah, yeah. And he's very much that. It's like he could be like a cocky, burnout, jaded jerk, and you kind of wouldn't blame him for it.
Yeah.
You know, but he's not. He's as sweet as he can be.
A lot of reasons to be, probably.
Yeah. You know, and he had me on a show, which was like really kind, and then he was like, I was about to go into the studio to do this new album, and he's like, when the new record's done, will you come back on the show? I'm like, yeah, of course. I'm like, kidding me? And, when it was all done, I sent it to him, and he was like, cool, can you come back next month? Let's talk about it. I was like, yeah, you know, that would be an honor. So he's so kind, man, and I try not to fanboy out him too much, and I feel like we kind of have a little rapport now. But I say all that to say, there's not another musician alive I would wish to have that kind of relationship with. And so it's really cool to get open for him, man. And supposedly, they're talking about doing a tour in the fall, and they're going to come back, which is very exciting. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully
I'll be there, because Mike Watt's one of those guys that when he comes through, I'm buying the ticket. I'm going to be there. And
I don't care. I don't care what the project is. Yeah.
And if I got to go to Asheville to see him, I'm going to go to Asheville to see him or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It never.
But luckily, he generally keeps Charlotte in the loop these days.
Yeah, and since the 90s, I mean, he played Tremont a ton back in the day.
Yep.
He was very sad to hear that it got torn down. You know, and as we all are, I was like, the milestone's still there. And he's like, oh yeah, but that place is never going anywhere.
I saw him on the Engine Room tour at Tremont.
Oh, cool. Like,
that was one of the best shows I have ever seen. It was so good.
I wish I could have saw that one, man. I just love that he played the record front to back.
Yeah.
You know, was Nels Klein was working guitar on that one, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's so cool. Yeah, that's definitely one of those tours if I had a time machine I would probably go to, honestly. Because I was aware, I got it, because you know, you buy the Descendants CD, it's got the SST catalog, and suddenly you're like, well, these bands sound cool, I guess I'll order.
I guess I gotta listen to this band and this band.
I'll order Black Flag Nervous Breakdown and Minutemen Paranoid Time. Yeah. They're $5 for the 7 inches, you know, and then they come in and you're like, what the heck is this? So yeah, I've been a fan for a long time, too, yeah. But I love his solo stuff. Engine Room's such a great, and honestly, I ramble a lot up, my apologies, but it does kind of tie in. Like, Engine Room was a big influence on the record I just made, because it, like, obviously he used lyrics, but he was told this story paralleling his life as a touring musician with his dad's life as a sailor. And I remember hearing that when it came out, and just like, man, what a, you know, I had just started touring, you know, and when I got into it, it's like, what a cool concept, you know, like going from port to port, you know, like, but we're working the towns and playing shows. And but I just love the idea of like telling a story that way. And then, you know, Shore Duty at the end, all about D Boone, the guitar man, and his best friend dying. And, you know, like, I just like, what a just front and back great record. And he just told this beautiful story. So I'm like, I want to do like what is my version of In the Engine Room?
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I feel like I did that with this record, which is like,
I can see that.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
And so I was like, I hope other people will get that, like we said before, but like, to me, it's like, I feel like
it's even got like the streetscape sounds. And one of my questions was, were those streetscapes recorded on the streets for the roads? Like, I mean, for the song that were named.
Yeah, absolutely. Songs, so. East, The Sound of My Keys. That's me walking into Tommy's.
Okay.
But at the end of East, there's that drum line going. That's outside of a Charlotte Football Club match. Okay. But we watch those matches at Tommy's a lot too, so it's kind of connected to the east side. But all the other street noise is from that,
from those areas.
Neighborhood mentioned.
Okay. I was like, hopefully so. It's got to be, right?
Yeah, and you know, with Central Avenue, it was kind of, one of the points of that song also, other than I wanted some punk rock on it, was there is a story to it with the construction,
mm-hmm.
Plaza Midwood being slowly leveled and gutted of all its beautiful resources of creativity and sketchiness that it used to be. You know, thankful for the troops still standing there, like Cobb Market and Petra's and Snug holding it down. But, you know, it's changing. It was such a special neighborhood to me.
It was for me, too.
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, back in the day when I first started coming to Charlotte.
Yeah.
Besides the Milestone, like, on Central Avenue, there was Milestone Records, which is, you know, has been going for a long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But Repo used to be on Central Avenue. Yep. Tommy's Pub was on Central Avenue.
Absolutely.
Now you've got Lunchbox Records on Central Avenue. Yep. So, I mean, that's just like, that's besides Milestone, that's like the punk rock area.
Absolutely.
And even though it's been taken over and changed, we still have those little spots.
Yeah. I mean, the first time I saw a restaurant with valet parking in Pleasant Midwood, and I was like, wow. You know, you used to worry about getting stabbed walking to your car.
Yeah. I don't see us like being transplanted to South Park anytime soon.
So, yeah.
So we'll still hold on to those little spots we can around Central Avenue.
And you know, and my point is, like, we need to... I think in our culture, we remember things after they're gone instead of enjoying them while they're there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that was a big part of this record, too, for me. It's like, why can't we have nostalgia in the moment? You know,
yeah,
it's like,
I feel the same way. Like,
yeah, and it's like, support the places you love. And it's like, I hope for a very long life for all those venues, but like, who knows how long? You just never know.
I mean, you always see about like restaurants closing in different areas, and you know, Plaza Midwood is one of those places.
Yeah, and the last day,
and usually like people are like, "Oh no, I can't believe it," but then they haven't.
When's the last time you went?
Yeah, it's like,
and you can't be too sad. Like, I go to Tommy's 3 times a week. Like, if Tommy's went under, you know, God forbid, I can say I did my part to save them. Exactly. You know, like same with the, you know, Common Market, Petra's. We do most of our shows there. Mm-hmm. Snug, like I do it. Like, because I love those places. Yeah. And I want to, like, if I can bring a ton of people there to support the bar and support the venue, Perry that owns Petra's is one of the greatest human beings on the planet. You know, he's so great to the bands, treats us great.
He's another one of those that, like I told you earlier, when I first got here before this was recording, I say, you know, I talk to people all the time and I'm like, I need to have you on the podcast.
Yeah.
And we kind of forget about, he's one of those guys.
Absolutely.
Because I've talked to him about it and it's been like, just kind of forgotten about.
Yeah, man. He's one of my favorite people in the Charlotte scene. I'm very grateful for him. And, yeah, but that's one of those things. Is like I want to, you know, I don't want to say, like, Petra's goes under, God forbid again. But like, if it does, I don't want to be like, oh man, yeah. Just, I don't remember the last time I went there, but I'm so sad. It's like, no, be there now. You know, like,
I need to get there more often myself. I mean, living as far out as I do, if I lived in town, I'd be at all these places a lot more often.
There are valid reasons,
but you know, I still need to make a point to get out there again soon.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. And this with the song Central Avenue, so like it starts with the big hits, bam, bam, bam. Mm. My thought with those was buildings falling down, like big hits, big crashes. Yeah. And then the bridge kind of section of the outro is like really like kind of pretty, kind of minor key. And the kind of thought of that was like trying to get this nostalgia of it. And then it ends with the hits again. Cause like, hey, the steamroller's coming, we can't stop it. But like, why not try to enjoy it while we have it?
Yeah.
You know? And so I really enjoyed trying to like come up with these little stories and try to sum them up instrumentally. You know, it was really fun and challenging, you know? But the boys that played on the record, and they're the main guys in the band, they're so great. They bring so many great ideas, too, because most of them I just came with a bass line, you know, and they filled in the gap. So it's like, I'm not writing every instrument part. And then the song East, our guitar player wrote, Zach Looper wrote the main riff for that. And so almost all of them, it was kind of like, I had a little bass riff, and they wrote this incredible counter guitar point, and then we just started bouncing around. So it was like, really... a special studio time. I try to do as little pre-pro as possible. I'm like, I'm gonna, because Watt told me with his Ball Hog or Tugboat record, he was like, he had this theory that if the bass player knew the songs, the rest of the band would be okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay,
I agree with that.
I do, me too. And I was like, I love that so much.
Yeah.
And so I went in the session with that attitude of like okay, well, like I'm gonna have a few riffs and like we got 2 days in the studio to do 6 songs. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't be happier with how it went. And you know, that helps having a really great band. It was totally like, I had like a basic structure, you know, just on bass. And so,
I'd like to go into the studio like that sometime with sort of that be able to explore it and build the song in the studio.
I haven't got too much.
We've talked about that.
Because it's usually tight, because it's expensive.
Yeah, we're always just ready to go and ready to record, and we've got the songs that we're going to do. But, I mean, there's so many times in practice where we just start jamming on something, and it sounds really good, and I'm like, you know, if we could, like, go in the studio with something like that.
Yeah.
And spend a couple of days just building two or three songs.
It's cool, man. It's a gamble because you also might not come up with shit
in the studio. And it's not cheap. So.
It's not cheap. So we did a Kickstarter for it because I really wanted to, like, pay all the guys for their time a little bit and rent out a good studio and be able to do that. But the whole time in the back of my head, I'm like, man, what if we just hit the brick wall? We can't come up with any ideas. What if these songs suck? What if my ideas don't work? So it was a gamble going in because, like, I got to make this record because people pre-ordered it.
Yeah.
So if we run out of studio time with the money I got from the Kickstarter, like, we got to finish it somehow. So thankfully, it was kind of down to the wire the second day, but we finished everything.
Yeah.
And very, very stoked on how it turned out.
I love it. Like I said, I listened to it twice today, and that says a lot right there. So.
Right. No, it's very, very kind, man. I really appreciate it.
I decided, I was like, I'm going to listen to that again on my way into Charlotte because, of course, you know, it's a record about Charlotte.
Totally. And that was my hope, is it was like, would kind of resonate with people, you know, and I had a couple like local interviews and they're like, I totally thought this song was about this because of this. And I'm like, that's really cool. That's not it at all. But I love that you got... Your experience with Charlotte made you think something about this song. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like, that really makes me happy to hear that, even if they were off base, you know?
that's the great thing about music is it's so, totally. You know, it's open to interpretation a lot of times, especially if you don't spell it out with lyrics.
Right.
People can kind of listen to it and feel what they want to feel or think what they want to think, and it might not be what you meant with it. But that doesn't mean that it's wrong because that's what it means to them. Or that's how they feel.
Yeah, man. That's one of the cool things about music. I mean, you know, The Anchor by the Minutemen, I never knew what it was about, but I thought it was this deep, poetic song about life, you know, anchor dragging behind, like, and then when their documentary came out, which, we jam Akano, and he's like, oh yeah, this song was a dream George had, he didn't remember what it was about, which is the drummer, he kind of wrote down his dream, and Watt wrote the song around it, because I think he wrote all the music on that record, What Makes a Man Start Fire, I was like, oh, it was just like a random ass dream the drummer had. I was like, oh, but that's cool too. But I always thought it was like, I don't know, I was reading way more into the lyrics. And, but that's cool though, you know, like, I appreciate it. But yeah, the last song, One More Year, when we were going to the studio, a good friend of ours had just passed away, and he was in public radio, actually. So we toured together for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. He died from complications of COVID. Mm. And so we go to the studio and we're all very close with them. So it was really hard. And that last song, I kind of had this idea for this really sad riff, but also kind of wanted to tie it into the beginning. Mm-hmm. Kind of like he does at Engine Room. So that was kind of a nod to it. But also I was like, this song could be huge and rock and roll, or it could be chill, or I didn't know where it was going to go. I just had the bass line, like I said, and it ended up being this really... the guys just started swelling up and making all this like noise around it. It'd be in this like kind of a heartbreaker gut punch. You know, I think we're all kind of feeling.
That's one of the ones I was thinking of when I said something about you go through these emotions. Yeah. Listen to it. You don't have to have words to make you feel emotions.
Right. And I think for me, you know, I had this idea that I called it One More Year cause it's called Give Me a Year. And the idea was like, I'm not ready for this trip to India, you know, even though it's been 20 years now, I'm still like, can I stay for one more year, please? Yeah. You know, and then one more and then one more. But, you know, and then after losing someone so close, I think the idea of, I already had it named One More Year. I think the idea maybe hit us all a little deeper than that. And it kind of ended up being this very sad, but beautiful jam. Mm-hmm. Cause we did that in one take live on the floor.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that was it. That's it. Yeah. You know? And, yeah, so it was kind of like a really special moment with it, too, you know, and it's just, you know, going back to like, someone was asking me about that song, like, oh, does that mean like, you're only going to be in Charlotte for one more year and you're sad about it? You know, and I'm like, no, but that's an interesting take. You know? Yeah. I hope not. No one's ran me out of town yet.
Thank you.
Well, was there anything else you wanted to talk about that we haven't covered? I mean, I know you did a project during the pandemic where you like had people just send you. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah,
like send you an idea for a song or something. You just write the song, or they.
Yeah. So, me and Leo Solis, again, we're serial collaborators. We do usually if one of us does something, the other does it. He just started a coffee shop, Lodo Cafe, in the same strip as Tommy's Pub.
Okay.
Right next to Viz Art Video, that alley.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome local coffee shop. And so, like, I started working there with him just because, like, whatever one of us does, the other is there. Yeah. Really cool spot, though. You should go out sometime. So we started Gigantic Recording Company during all that because we were, you know, we couldn't tour.
Yeah.
For the first time in 20 years, I couldn't tour. And so we're pretty savvy with recording. We have little home setups. Mm-hmm. And so we had this idea, like, I'll send us a demo, like, to a click.
Okay, yeah.
We'll play everything. We bring out the drummer from $1,000 Movie, Dom Gerald's a great drummer, and he has a setup at home. He can record. We're like, we can probably catch more fish together as a little crew with a cool logo than like just one of us at a time. Like, hey, can I play bass for you? And so we started Gigantic Recording Company, and yeah, people send us a demo to a click. We play everything. We send them back an instrumental once they are happy with it. Mm-hmm. They track their vocals because we have cats all over the world that have done this now, which is really cool.
Yeah.
They track their vocals, they send us the files, we mix it, master it, they have a finished song.
Yeah.
And we do it all like a big flat rate. It's like pretty econo. And it's been really cool because there's some cats that's like, yeah, I just moved to a new city, I haven't met any other musicians yet. I have these songs, this will help me kind of put a band together.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I can show the other guys what to do. We've had a stay-at-home mom sing to a click without any chords. She just had a melody idea and lyrics. And we wrote the rest of it for her.
Oh, wow.
And now she's, like, did a music video for it. She's doing shows.
Oh, wow.
And she just never thought she could do music. So it's very much a part of the punk rock thing we grew up with. It's like, anyone can play music. You can write a song about anything.
Yeah,
like we said at the beginning. Like, I like food. Anybody can be a musician, you know? And I'm grateful that punk rock gave me that permission.
Yeah.
But not everybody's had that permission in their life.
Exactly. You
know?
Yeah.
Some people, they haven't had that kind of punk rock moment, for lack of a better term, because it's not always punk rock. Sometimes it's, you know, having a cool artistic parent. Or
There's different things.
Cool older brother. Yeah. Somebody has to give you permission at some point.
The way I look at it, though, it's all pretty much punk rock. It leads you in the direction of the things that you love.
Yeah. When you're using it in terms of, like, the movement, like Watt says, instead of, like, the BPM and the genre, you know? Yeah. Like, when you say punk rock is, like, the movement, then, like, it existed. It gave you permission.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it still does to me to this day. And we started Gigantic doing that, and it kept the lights on for me during COVID, which I'm very grateful for. But also, it's like, we're still doing it.
That's what I was going to ask. Was it something you still do?
Yeah. We're usually doing 5 or 6 songs a month.
Oh, wow.
For different artists all over the world.
Yeah.
And some of them will, like, hey, actually, can we do a 10-song album? Like, absolutely, let's do it. it's a lot of fun. It's like almost every day. At least an hour every day I'm doing email work for it. Because we all have our little jobs. Like, Dom handles the bank stuff and the social media. And I handle all the artist relations and deliver the files. And if they have any revisions, I get it to Leo, who does the mixing. And,
yeah.
You know, so we have a nice little system. And
do you play, like, a lot of different genres of music by doing this?
Oh, man.
Like, so somebody sends you, like, sort of a vocal track to something that they had, like a guitar.
Yeah, and we asked them for, like, some genre references, maybe, like, some Spotify or YouTube tracks, and so it's everything from, like, Nine Inch Nails to Jack Johnson to, you know, like acoustic singer-songwriter to, like, jazzy, soulful, woman singer. And
have you run into something that you can't quite pull off yet?
Not yet. We've had one or two people out of, like, we've probably done 100 songs now, which is crazy. We've had one or two where they were, like, they sent us all these references, and we were like, we thought we nailed it. We're this is sick. And it is. And it was. Like, I think we know enough to know. It's like, we nailed the direction they gave us. And they're like, I don't like this. Let's start over.
Yeah.
Like, let's maybe go this direction instead. We're like, okay, that's fine. Because at the end of the day, I want them to be stoked.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a lot of ego in recording stuff, especially in, like, the Nashville, LA world. And we try to be the opposite of that. The client, for lack of a better term, you know, the artist should be stoked. You know, we want to help them do that. And so we do that. We do Gigantic Recording Company, and people send us a demo, we make them a song, is the tagline.
Yeah.
And it's been really cool. Yeah, we still do it. But other than that, I recently joined a band called Crenshaw Pentecostal out of Winston-Salem. Okay. Country rock and roll, kind of punky, and I was kind of filling in for them occasionally, and they asked me to kind of be the main bass player, which I was like very happy about because I love playing with them. They're so great. Yeah. And
do they play a lot of shows?
Yeah. Yeah, so it was great jumping into like a well-oiled machine, and they're doing like 3 or 4 shows a month and it's like all around the Carolinas, East Coast, and so it's like hell yeah, let's go.
Any dates in Charlotte coming up soon or
yeah we're playing April 16th, which is a Sunday at Tommy's Pub.
Okay.
And we're going to do like a matinee show starting at 4 with a couple bands.
Sweet.
And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So that's the next Charlotte one. We played at Petra's a few weeks ago, and it was a blast as well.
I mean, people listen to this all over the Carolinas, too. So
yeah,
if,
awesome.
If you have any other shows, like
Yeah, 416 at Tommy's with Crenshaw. And then 414, we're playing at the Flatiron in Greensboro with them.
Yeah.
Which is rad venue. I've never been there. And then $1,000 Movie, our next one is we're playing May 4th at Petra's with a great band called Dumbass Youth, which is Mike Maggetta from Missive.
Okay.
He was the guitar man in the Watt Project. He started this band with, I want to say it's the drummer from Deerhoof, is what he said, is involved with it in some way. It's very weird avant-garde. It's not out yet, but he sent me the record and it's crazy.
Well, I was just saying earlier I need to make a point to get out to Petra, so it sounds like there's one I need to get to.
Yeah, May 4th, and we're gonna open for them and I'm very excited about it. It's a really cool project.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna play June 3rd there as well, opening for one of my all time favorite bands, Unwed Sailor, great instrumental band. So that's kind of what we have on the books right now, but we're cooking up some others.
Sweet. Hey, where can people find the music?
Yeah. So I'm Jeremy Radio on the socials, and I'm always spieling about all the assorted projects. But then $1,000 Movie's on everything.
Yeah.
And if you go to $1,000 Movie or Four Finger Records on Instagram, we have a link to like merch and
Bandcamp and stuff like that.
Bandcamp, absolutely. Yeah, we're on the Bandcamp as well.
Yeah.
So I got a couple tapes left. We printed a ton, and they're almost all sold out, which is like bonkers to me.
Yeah. If you have any more, I need to buy one.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I got like 3 left.
Okay.
Actually, so photo finish. I was really. People keep saying like, oh, like where are you printing tapes? No one buys tapes. I'm like, bro, I just sold like 100 for like
That's what I've said. You know, like we made cassettes, and I didn't have any problem selling those. CDs, I kind of had a problem selling.
Same. And vinyl is just so expensive right now. It's hard. You know.
I'd love to do it. That's our next goal.
Yeah.
With the songs we're going to record this week. And hopefully it'll come out vinyl.
It's coming back down. In 2020, we did 207 inches for $900. Mm-hmm. And the same company, the same setup a few months ago was $1,800 and 18-month wait. Wow. And I was like, okay, like it doesn't make sense for small bands to do vinyl
right now.
But someone told me last month they reached out to some companies and it seems like it's all chilled back out again, which is good to know. But unless you're touring hard, it's hard to move 507 inches.
Yeah.
You know,
we've got an idea of what we want to do
with it.
And, you know, I've been on vinyl a couple of times. One of them was a 7-inch that never really got officially released. And then the other time was on a compilation.
Okay.
When they had the Independence on it, actually.
Oh, cool. No way.
And it was on, I think, Very Small or Too Many Records. I'm trying to remember. There was a record label that was at one point Very Small and Too Many records. And I can't remember. I think they were Very Small at the time.
Okay.
But it was cool. We just sent our demo. It was songs about drinking. The That's band awesome. I was in was Popes on Dope.
Okay.
The song was Beer Slob.
Oh, I had that compilation.
Oh, really?
I swear to God. Yeah, yeah, I had that because they Independence had the beer song on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me
yeah,
up here. Yeah. And I'm thinking, yeah, all right. Yeah. That's Hell awesome. Yeah. I had that. Yeah, comp. I remember that song for real. Yeah. I love We had a Manifest in Florence, South Carolina, which is the town over from me. And yeah, yeah. I would always go to the compilation section and buy all of them because I was. You know, as Watt says, cursed with curiosity, as he describes it, which I like that a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still that way when I go buy records. If I see something that looks cool and I've never heard it, and it, especially if it's fairly cheap, I'm like, I'm going to buy that. And a lot of times I get home, I'm like, well, it's not as cool as it looked.
Absolutely.
But you know, I'm gonna check it out.
But I wanted to hear it. Like, man, the late 90s was the height of rad compilations, like. And they would be like $2 at Manifest. I'd buy all.
Oh, yeah, same here. Every time I go to Manifest or wherever, I'd buy what I was looking for, but I would always end up with like two or three little sampler comps.
Yeah. Oh, man. They'd have by the register for $1 sometimes. Yeah. Oh, it was so great. That's how I found so many of my favorite bands, you know. But yes, that's what's coming up for us. And, you know, the new record just dropped. We had the release at Petra's, and it was a blast. I was blown away by all the cats that came out. So, just feeling very, very grateful for the Charlotte music scene. I love it, and I love to be a part of it. And,
same here. Yeah, it's awesome.
It's special to me, man. I get to travel. I've been, fortunate to get to travel this whole world, and I love Charlotte. Like, I don't live here because I have to. I love it. Like, I love Chicago. I love LA. I love a lot of cities, but I'm like, I can't see myself living there.
Yeah,
it's like it's great to visit. Love going to a Cubs game, getting a hot dog, but like, I love coming back to Charlotte.
I mean, I'm from Kings Mountain, and like Gastonia is right between here and Charlotte.
Yeah,
and so I don't like it when people like bag on the hometown. Like,
no.
You know, I understand Gastonia is easy to make jokes about, so I'm fine with that. But like, I hear people badmouth Charlotte all the time, and I'm like, really, if you're that down on it, you're hanging out with the wrong people.
I agree.
You need to change the people you hang out with.
I agree, man, and I agree. It's not the kind of city you can land on a plane and wander around and find the cool stuff. You might need to be pointed in the right direction, but if you try a little, you can find like. I've heard people say we don't have a good music scene. I'm like, are you crazy? When's the last local show you went to?
It's like,
whatever genre you're into, it's here. Maybe not like...
Charlotte has always had
a great music scene. I wish we had more ska, but outside of that...
I mean, it kind of ebbs and flows at times, but there's always... Like, Charlotte's always been fairly consistent with music, you know?
I think so, man.
I mean, there might be a couple of down years, but it always builds back up.
There's always a band, like they've slowed down a little bit, like Pullover. I generally love that band so much. I've seen them like 10 times.
Yeah.
And if they play tomorrow, I'd go to Snug and see them. Like, you know, Junior Astronomers, I've known this guy since they were like 18. They're such a great band, put on a great show. Like, there's so many great bands here that you can go see for $5 and have a blast.
Or for free at you know, Tommy's or where.
Right,
know,
yeah. And if some of the bands suck, go smoke a cigarette outside until they're done, you know? Like, it's fine.
Or even if they're good, sometimes you go out and listen to it from outside because that place is kind of small and it gets crowded.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, like, I love it, man. I think we have something really special here, and I'm honored to be a part of it in any way, you know?
I'm glad you're a part of it, and I love being a part of it, too.
So. Yeah, well, I'm glad you are, too, because you're doing great things documenting it, man. It's you're doing really rad stuff. I really enjoy it.
That's what I like about you. I remember you talking about that on Invibes, like how you wanted to document your core of the scene. And it's like, I love people that want to document the scene, because that's exactly what I do.
Exactly. It's like, and it's not a one-man job. We need lots of people doing it.
Everybody's got to do it, because I pretty much cover like the punk rock, and I venture into other things, but it's sort of based on what I know, and that's punk rock.
Yeah, same. Yeah, you know, everything filters through that for me my life. You know,
I'm glad there are other people out there doing it for different parts of the scene as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, because it's crazy to me when someone would be like, "Oh, do you ever go to shows that like, let's say Smokey Joe's? I've just never been to shows that much. It's a cool place.
Yeah,
nothing against it. I just like I can only go to so many clubs on a weekly basis, you know. And I'm like, I love that there's a scene and bands. There are bands that mostly play just there.
Yeah.
And I don't even know about it. I love that.
Yeah.
Like, because I know about a lot of the scene, and it's like, well, okay, we need someone to document that too. Yeah, we need someone to document what's going on at Skylark or the Milestone. Like, there's just so much going on. I say all to say it's very, I appreciate what you do, and it's important.
Thank you.
Yeah, man.
Awesome. Well, same for you. Like I said, it takes, to borrow a phrase, it takes a village.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we all got to do our part.
Yeah. No, I end every show and I say, like, start a band, start a blog, start a podcast, buy a camera, take pictures. Like, we have a great scene, and
anyone can get involved in it.
Yeah,
because exactly. Like if I can do it, sure shit anybody can. You know,
trust me, I learned that a long time ago.
Like, yeah,
as a you know an 18, 19 year old trying to get shows in Charlotte.
Yeah.
And just going, well, let's do my own show.
Yeah, exactly. No,
and you know, here 30 years later, I'm still out there throwing my own shows. But
dude, it's
now,
awesome.
Now I use clubs to do it.
Right. But no, that's how it goes, man. It's like if someone won't let you in the gate, like dig a hole under it and yeah, you know, go your own way. It's like there's no reason you can't join the party. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, I love it, man.
Heck yeah. Awesome. Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I think unless you got anything else.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's it. You know, come if you listen, I appreciate you. Come to the shows. Check out the record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely check out that record. It's awesome. This has been a Gabba Gabba Hunt Media Production.
Sponsored by Modelo.
Oh, yeah.